Hello and welcome to the It's 5 o'clock Somewhere podcast, where we join David Yarrow on his photographic adventures around the world. My name is Alex Ames and I will be hosting the show for us this morning. For the best experience, please download and listen on the Entail app, where you can view all of the photographs that David and his guests will be referring to throughout the show. David has just returned from a three-week voyage to South Georgia, which for those who don't know is a small rock in the middle of the South Atlantic with some of the most phenomenal wildlife scenes in the world. South Georgia is home to some of the most spectacular penguin colonies on the planet, but it is extremely difficult to get there. We were very fortunate to visit South Georgia with only 9 people, thanks to the logistical expertise of Natural World Safaris. Joining us this week is Abraham Joff, an internationally award-winning director, producer, and director of photography, who has gained critical acclaim for his unique visuals and storytelling with his production company, Untitled Films. Abe is a highly talented underwater cameraman, a top drone pilot, and him and his team are experts at finding extreme perspectives in extreme conditions, perhaps most notably in the popular series Big Cats, filmed in the Masai Mara. Abe's Netflix show, Tales by Light, follows the world's best photographers and filmmakers as they bring their visual stories to life, and it was this that brought him to our attention. Abe, thanks so much for joining us on a transatlantic call from Sydney, and welcome to the show.
Thank you. Great to be here.
So you guys have just had a very busy Christmas period, or the lead up to Christmas. Can you tell our audience where you've been together and how you conceived of the trip?
I've known of Abe's work for quite a while. We met in Africa a couple of years back, and it was always my goal to try and find a project that would be sufficiently original and interesting to entice him along, because the most valuable commodity he has is time, and it's precious. And so I think a kind of run-of-the-mill trip to somewhere in East Africa wasn't going to do it. I think we had to go to somewhere that was the final frontier, and something that was also an investment of time and, to an extent, money as well. And Abe agreed to come along, and so we spent the best part of 2 weeks together on a boat. I'm not a good person on a boat because I can never keep still, but thanks to his company and his team's company, the 2 weeks actually went very quickly.
Yes, 100%. And I think obviously it was great meeting David in Africa a couple of years ago now, and obviously I've been following his work for quite a while, and great to meet the man behind the images. And as David said, I think we were just both trying to find a project to start hopefully a bit of a long-term relationship of creativity together. And South Georgia, I think, was an amazing first choice. I was lucky enough to have actually visited before. I was down there in 2015, February, at the end of the season, which was actually during the filming of our Netflix series, Tales by Light. But I was actually on that particular trip there with a great photographer, Peter Eastway, landscape photographer. But we were there with 50 other passengers, and that's where how most people do get down to Antarctica and the polar regions. It's an incredibly remote location, as you know. It's it just really is the end of the earth, literally, and so it's incredibly expensive. But to have an opportunity to go with a very small team of people and pretty much have the place, well, actually have the place to ourselves, was just, it was a dream come true. We all dream of locations to have all to your own, because really that's the experience everyone yearns for, and you don't always have it. But when you do have it, and especially in somewhere so spectacular, you really want to do it justice. And yeah, I think, the other thing I should say as well is, I guess being able to see David work in the field firsthand was pretty special. For anyone who follows his work and sees the images, the spectacular shots that he gets, my job was to sort of try to capture, along with Dom West, my cinematographer, right-hand man, an amazing cameraman and filmmaker, the two of us, Our job was to try to not get in his way, but actually capture the process. And it was you know, an amazing journey.
And how many people were actually on the beach with you guys? How many people did you go with to South Georgia?
It was limited to Abe's team and two or three very close friends of mine, one of whom's a very decent photographer. So it was a very small human footprint, and it worked. The best thing was, as Abe alluded to, is you want to have control over your beach landing times. If you're beholden to a large party, you can never turn around and say, I want to land at this time. You're often the lowest common denominator. Whereas on this occasion, I could turn around and say, we need to leave at 3:30 a.m. in the morning. And that makes a big difference, because the light in the South Georgia, when you can see the sun, and quite often you can't, it is their summer or their early summer. And the times at which a lot of people would be landing, if the sun is out, the sun is too high. So we were working a bit like sometimes you work in East Africa. We were working on the basis that if there was good light, we wanted to get the first rays of light and the last rays of light. And that's just not practically possible if you're part of a 50 or 60 team crew. So it was good. It was good that I was to an extent in charge, and we had a captain that was a yes man. Abe's a yes man. I'm a yes man, and anything is possible. And I think the fact that there was that collective ethos helped us enormously.
And I mean, I think you can both answer this separately. What is it that you hope to achieve when you set out on the trip? You know, it's a huge financial investment, and it's a long way to go. So you've got a lot of time building up to that moment when you land on the beach. What is it that you're looking for? What is it that you hope to bring home?
Well, I think from my perspective, Abe's incredibly talented at what he does. I think he had a slightly marginally easier gig, because with cinematography, it is at the margin easier to capture the enormity and the awesomeness of a place much more than in one still image. But with that comes pressure for him to get it right, and he's a perfectionist, and he absolutely did get it right. But from my perspective, South Georgia is like a Jurassic Park at the end of the world. And if your focal point is portraiture or 2 or 3 foot from the camera, I don't think you capture that sense of place. Equally, if your focal point is the enormous mountains in the background, the pictures can be very loose, and you don't have something in the foreground to capture people's attention. So trying to get the best of both worlds, trying to capture on the one hand the scale, the depth, but also take decent portraits of the wildlife that's there and the numbers of wildlife. That was the kind of riddle that I was confronted with, and that was my goal, to try and blend the two together, which is, it's maths as much as anything else.
Abe, what about you? What was it like, you know, that pressure leading up to, I mean, I think it was 6 days we were traveling to actually land on location in South Georgia. There must be things ticking over in your mind the whole way. What is it that you hope to achieve?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, the anticipation on any trip is always builds as you get closer to going and prepping. And having such a long journey to get there only amplifies that for all of us. I think the other thing that was, well, there's the few things that were on my mind. One, that we had after many, many months of paperwork, we did manage to get quite special drone permits to fly drones in South Georgia, which was pretty rare, and we knew that would be a what's something I've seen very little of. So I'm a big lover of aerial work, and that was definitely a perspective on the whole experience that we wanted to capture. But I think, of course, most importantly, it was David's aura, his grit, determination. That was really what the film was most important to me to capture. And it was also tricky, because in the moments where David really was grinding it out in the surf and in the, you know, on the rocks and getting muddy, he was really trying to capture the images. He wasn't playing it for the camera. And so sometimes when we shoot, you know, we have worked with a lot of photographers around the world, and if we're there, you know, maybe shooting Tales by Light, the filmmaking sort of does take precedence. And so often I'm right in front of my subjects. But with David, we sort of had to pick our moments, and we the last thing we wanted to do was destroy a moment that he's trying to capture. So that was a little bit of a challenge, but I enjoyed that. And David's right too. It's when he said how, I think he used the word screen struck, you can be when you turn up to a place that is just so off the charts, incredible. It is like another world. And there's very few places in the world where you can be up close to large animals on foot without protection, without vehicles, without cages or hides. So it's really, really special. So you can almost get sort of stuck and think, well, where do you go? Because you can see sort of shots everywhere. So some part of the challenge is slowing down your mind and starting to try to be deliberate. And I mean, the good thing about working with Dom, and we've been working together for quite a few years, is we trust each other so much. And because film is a montage, like David said, we aren't there to capture one image, one single frame that sums up, the whole scene. We are building on shots, and we need variety of images to build a story. But having Dom there, we can actually lean on each other a lot. We trust each other so much. I can be flying the drone, Dom could be working in gimbal shot, and then I can get onto some sticks and a tripod, and so having that means that we could really make use of the time. And then we have a bit of we sort of feed off each other. So that was great to be there with him. And I think also what was really special about the trip was, like David said as well, is that we were all there to make absolute use of every minute of the best conditions we could. And we were on the beach just before 4 a.m. one morning, and and we got some fantastic imagery that morning. So just being surrounded by people who are also just all there with the same determination was it's really infectious, and I think everyone feeds off that.
I think in a boat, when you've got one main common area with a little bit of red wine and a bit of whiskey and whatever, in the evenings you can do a collective introspection of what you've got right and what you've got wrong. That's one of the great benefits of the digital age, is that there's an immediacy of retrospection, whereas in the old days when you put films into your camera, you didn't really know what you'd got, and you didn't know what you were getting right and what you were getting wrong. It is a very, very tough gig, South Georgia, because whilst there is a huge amount of wildlife there, most of the wildlife is either penguins, of which they're just biblical numbers of penguins, king penguins, biggest colonies in the world, 100,000 here, 100,000 there, or seals, some of which are elephant seals, which are something out of Game of Thrones, really. They're Jurassic-looking animals. But neither penguins or elephant seals top the list of most people's alpha animals. It's not like you're shooting a polar bear or an elephant or a tiger. And when you are shooting alpha animals like that, you're kind of 30 love up and serving already, because you know what is in front of the lens is something that appeals to so many people. In South Georgia, it's tougher because people love penguins, but they've also seen an awful lot of shots of penguins. And what we didn't want to come home with was a kind of, ooh, isn't that sweet type picture. We wanted a picture or pictures that showed scale. And as Abe said, when you first arrive there, there's a sense of visual dislocation. You kind of go, bloody hell, look at that. And yet, to begin with, I wasn't really conveying that in a single image. And that's where I'm very critical of myself, where I wasn't doing the job of conveying what I was seeing in a way that other people that weren't there would also go, wow. So every evening you've got a chance to do a bit of fear and self-loathing and self-flagellation and try and work out what you were getting wrong. And often you might not have been getting anything wrong. It might just have been that the weather wasn't right or the visuals didn't appear in the way that you were hoping they were going to appear. But it's an iterative process. And if I think the iterative process was helped by having a lot of smart people around, all of whom were working towards the same goal. I don't know what Ansel Adams, one of his great prompts was photography is many things. It's about the poems you've read, the music you've listened to, the loves you've made, the loves you've lost, and the photographs of others. I spend a lot of time before we went to South Georgia looking at the photographs of others to see what I liked about them, to see maybe what they missed. We took a ladder all the way from London to South Georgia because I felt that raised elevation might be a handy perspective in which to convey depth. And depth is very important in places like St. Andrews Bay. It wasn't as if we hadn't given it a huge amount of thought, and that thought continued whilst we were on the boat. And the good thing is there was no egos there. Abe's incredibly talented at what he does, but there's no ego. I think we're both got strong work ethic, and we're probably both our own biggest critics, and just wanted to come back on that dreadful journey home with something in the can. And I got there in the end, but I took my time. I took my time to get there.
South Georgia is in many ways seen as this sort of holy grail for photographers in the genre in which both of you two work, or cinematographers. The best photographers in the genre have all been driven to go there, and it's a tall order to get there. What is it that you think, from a human perspective and from a photographer's perspective, you know, the experience of stepping onto that beach, what is it that makes it so sought after?
Well, I think partly the question is the answer. It's the final frontier. There are so many wonderful places in America that are visually intoxicating, but that visual intoxication is shared by thousands of people a year, which at the margin takes some of the shine off it, because you feel as if you're in 2018, you're not getting new original content. Original content are two words now that we put together like chalk and cheese. And South Georgia clearly is a place where you can get original content. It is dramatic. The Faroe Islands have a similar feel to South Georgia, but the Faroe Islands are a two-hour flight from Copenhagen, whereas this is 3 days from London. Also, the Faroe Islands don't have the kind of wildlife that you see in South Georgia. So it's dramatic. It's some of the cliffs that go into the sea, they do remind me of that first sequence we ever saw from Steven Spielberg on Jurassic Park. It is, as I said before, it's Jurassic Park at the end of the world.
Yes, and it's interesting, if I just add to that, I think a lot of people, I've been lucky enough to visit Antarctica once, the peninsula, on the same trip in 2015, and it was beautiful, and there's obviously it's a very large continent. And I think for people who are thinking about, you know, the adventurous types that like to travel and like wild destinations, Antarctica is always generally the top of the list for people because, well, it is the seventh continent. It's probably what people know. I think South Georgia is for the people who, certainly if people are really into their photography and they research, and if they've been to both, you will find that most photographers, myself included, you want to return to South Georgia before Antarctica if I was given a choice. Or at the very least, if you're going down there, if you're picking a voyage, try to pick one that also visits South Georgia, because it's just because of the wildlife and the spectacle is just, there's nowhere else like it on the planet. And obviously Antarctica's certainly got that. It's a huge place, and there's some amazing colonies and wildlife, but it's just the concentration on the beaches of South Georgia And the fact that we can step ashore, I think it's pretty special. Also, probably David's feels the same as me. The world does seem to get smaller all the time, and with populations growing all the time and tourism continuing to grow. Even South Georgia's getting the numbers, and to Antarctica, it's growing every year. It only comes with more regulations, and it's, you can understand why, because of the human impact. And so who knows, you know, in a few years, you might not be able to step ashore. You might be doing Zodiac cruises along the beaches of South Georgia. So, you know, I want to experience these places while you can, in such a visceral way. And it's nothing like going to a place with a purpose. And David certainly has that with all of his journeys. And I feel very fortunate with Dom and Louis and my team. When we travel, we are going with a purpose, to tell a story and to come back with, to be able to share it and come back. It's the greatest gift. So yeah, that's just a little insight from me. And so if you're thinking of going down that part of the world, certainly try to fit in South Georgia. That's my advice.
And we were lucky enough to go with the help of a company called Natural World Safaris, where I'm affiliated to. I guess I'm a kind of ambassador for them. And so much of this is about logistics, and they don't miss any tricks logistically. It was very comfortable. Well, it was as comfortable as it could be. The boat was comfortable. Some of the seas aren't that comfortable. But if you're going to go that far, you do want to go with operators that get the best people. And we had a great crew, a very good captain. I think if it had been a lesser crew and a less obliging captain, it would have put pressure on us all. I look at the best pictures I've taken in 2018, and the one thing that unites just about all the pictures is that when I took the photograph, there was no one else within about 10 miles of me at the time. Or maybe 5 miles. The only time when there were people with me when I took the photograph was in South Georgia, but that was just a handful of people. Whereas if it had been Antarctica, it would have been a large number of people. And that makes it all the harder to get original content. Very few people can afford to go to Antarctica on their own for so many different reasons. And if you are one of 10 people with the same camera gear, it is difficult. Unless you go off on your own and you go 2 miles into the ice, which you wouldn't be allowed to do. Antarctica is a tough gig, and so South Georgia. But the way we got around it was by investing and just doing it exclusively and just having cameramen on the boat.
You alluded to the challenges of getting to South Georgia. What do you think is challenging from a technical perspective about this trip? What made it difficult? I mean, the weather is certainly one thing.
I think the most challenging thing is in conveying depth. Depth of field is very important. If you've got to choose between the foreground being in focus and the background being in focus, you always go with the foreground because it's the first thing that your eye sees. But then you've got to work out mathematically, sometimes with quite limited light, how if the foreground is going to be in focus, you can still get enough detail in the background that it tells a story rather than being a tension point. Also, if the light is strong, and some days you can get beautiful weather down there. When we found when you get the light hitting the penguin's breast, which is white, as we know, it can be a little bit too much. It can be a bit glaring and loud, and it's shouting at you too much. So the pictures that we took, even after 6:30 in the morning on sunny days, they didn't work because there was just the penguins were too loud. They were shouting at you, and everything else was too loud. It was just the best time of day, probably, was around about between 4:30 in the morning and 5 o'clock in the morning. So there's a hell of a challenge for a start, because you remember the opening scenes of Saving Private Ryan. I'm not suggesting that we were doing a D-Day landing, but it is quite a it's a challenging landing, albeit we're not being shot at. But it there was a sense that it's not a normal thing to be doing is landing a Zodiac on a beach at 3:45 in the morning in the South Atlantic. That's with a load of camera gear. That's a bridge too far for most people, I think.
And Abe, so sorry to put this little black mark on your record, but I think you one of your drones had a technical issue and you had to bring it down. I assume that's because of the weather. I mean, there must have been some challenges working in those conditions.
Oh, yeah. I mean, look, it's for me, we don't like losing equipment or breaking or damaging equipment, but for me it's and I think David feels the same way, the most important thing is that you have functioning equipment to get home with the shots, with the gold and the data. The hard drives, when you travel with them empty, I always say at the start of a trip they're not really, they're worth a few hundred dollars, the cost of a drive. And then if they're full of juicy footage or photographs, they're sort of invaluable to you. It's just interesting how their value changes. For me, the equipment, we obviously take a lot of backups. You've got to have backups of all the key things, the things that are really, if they let you down, and if you know, you do something to break it or lose it or whatever, that you can keep going. And it's always a challenge because, which, you know, with the amount of equipment, you are limited to how much you can drag around the world. For me, the aerials were so important here, particularly to me, that we did bring two complete full Inspire 2 systems, which were, you know, large and you know, expensive to sort of keep running. And yeah, we did have one problem with one, which sort of put it out of action for the rest of the trip, which was fine because we had our backup. Talking about weather too, it's interesting. You know, your instincts when you look out in bad weather, rain or sleet or whatever it is, you know, the human nature is to sort of want to roll back into bed, turn the doona over. But of course, you know, later on when you look at the footage or you look at the photographs, that can often be when that is, you know, the most dramatic material is possible. And I mean, clearing storms, you know, is often the most spectacular sort of.
It feels very South Georgia when it's got that weather, right?
Absolutely. So, you know, it's sort of you want to be in the right place when the light does occur, like it was in that early morning, or if the storm's changing. I mean, for us, you know, some of the best footage from this trip was actually when it was just sort of sleeting sideways, and David's there, you know, face, you know, screwing up, and he's trying to, you know, see through the ice, and you know, that's great stuff. And you can't engineer that. There's only one way to get that atmosphere, and it's to be out there in the conditions. And so things get wet, things get, you know, malfunction. They can. I mean, you know, a lot of the gear we use is quite weather sealed, but we all push it to the limits. But that's what it's for, you know.
Yeah. I think you did better than me, Abe. I think by the time the last day, I had one camera that was still working out of five. So I'm sorry, Nikon, but I think we lost two to sand and two to water. I think if I'd gone on that trip and I'd come back and all five of my cameras were working, I'd have actually turned around and said I wasn't trying hard enough. Yeah. I think it's proof that we put ourselves through it, that we lost four out of the five cameras.
We won't send this to Nikon or DJI then.
No, I mean, I think it's fine. I mean, the repair department's very good and it's entirely my fault.
Interesting, you're talking about the drone work you do, Abe. I mean, me and David both know from following your work that it really is some of the best in class, and it was brilliant to see the instant feedback on the boat, you know, just an hour after we've been shooting, to be able to see the work you've done. But what was really amazing was maybe something that's slightly different from your usual work. You got an incredible photograph of South Georgia, and I just wanted you to talk a little bit about that, if that's something you're interested in exploring.
Yeah, well, firstly, thank you. I do love the aerials. I mean, I think when we the freedom that getting a camera in the air gives you is that you, apart from climbing up the side of a hill or a sand dune to get that sort of different perspective, you are pretty much, we are all limited to the singular plane that we all reside on, until, of course, you can get the camera airborne. And I think the drone revolution has just it has been a real revolution. When you know a lot of things throw that word around, this is real. And I've been, I guess, I threw myself into it probably 2012, end of 2012, 2013. So about five, almost 6 years now. And back at the beginning, it was I travelled with a great drone pilot, Toby De Jong, and we did a few years together. And he used to, we have to bring these huge cases along because there was no these ready to fly systems. It was all built, you know, build your own, and they were very loud, dangerous, and took a huge amount of power to get them airborne. But the last sort of 3 or 4 years since the sort of the systems that you can learn to fly and they're sort of, you know, out of the box, you can actually take them up. I've just, you know, we've just all, everyone in our crew has just gone nuts. You know, we love it. And I think what I'm, when anyone first starts droning and filming or taking photographs, although I see less people using them for photography, I think it's all about the big wide aerial, the big sweeping shots. And I think what you do, probably like you could find a correlation with photography, is that once you sort of get that out of your system, you can look for the more nuanced angles, perspectives. And so, you know, trying to get aerials that don't look like aerials is sort of what I like to do these days. You know, I can actually put longer lenses on the drone that we fly, and sometimes you can be completely static. Sometimes you just use it like a big rail or a jib. And that just sort of gives richness to the overall edit, and you can actually have quite a lot of aerial work without seeming gratuitous. So it's sort of hidden in the film. And, we, you know, I certainly got, I was very happy with the amount of different perspectives that we were able to capture down in South Georgia. And one thing I haven't, yeah, now that you mentioned the photograph, I mean, I've been telling all my photography friends for a long time that they really should be using drones for photography. I think it's just, it's amazing. And I mean, I'm always looking through my screen and seeing just incredible perspectives on the planet that, that I haven't seen before. And of course, as a filmmaker, I'm always, my default is to film, you know, that's what I'm there to do. So taking photographs is the last priority. And if I occasionally have a little bit of, if I've really shot the hell out of it and I've still got the subject, then sometimes I'll afford myself a photograph, but not as often as I'd like. And I think on this particular trip, down on the beach, looking through the hundreds of thousands of king penguins and elephant seals and, you know, particularly backlit, when we had that setting sun, the light rays, the shadows, it was just spectacular. I mean, we were all experiencing it on the beach, but to see it from the air was just, you know, mouthwatering.
Yeah, it was biblical.
Absolutely, yeah, just really nowhere else like that on Earth. You know, that and that's also what felt so special, being there and seeing it. Yeah, so we're all really thrilled to see it all, to be able to share it all very soon. And anyway, to get onto the photograph, you know, I had to take a photograph, and actually over the first couple of days at St. Andrews Bay, which was actually the last landing site that we visited. And it was, I think, safe to say we all thought it was the most spectacular of all the landings we had. St. Andrews was just, it was on the biggest scale. It had the biggest mountains behind it. The biggest colony on South Georgia of king penguins. And I managed to, after a couple of attempts, a couple of different sessions, you know, get a nice image of the setting sun and this just, yeah, biblical, you sort of lose words how to describe the scene. But it was sort of almost with the backs of thousands and thousands of penguins, young and, you know, the juveniles and the older ones, they sort of look like they're all facing the sun and sort of almost like praying to some god. Like, it was just a pretty special moment. So I was very happy with the photo, and it was pretty chuffed to hear David was a fan as well.
Well, not really. It's quite irritating. It wasn't your job to do that. And you've gone and taken a picture that everyone likes much more than mine. So I'm actually quite hurt by the whole thing.
David, can you talk me through, I know the hero shot that's come out of this, I think you're calling it the Breakfast Club. Can you talk to me about the image, please?
I mean, it sort of ticks the boxes in terms of what I was hoping to get beforehand. I know that sounds rather calculating and suggests a lack of spontaneity. but there was a degree of spontaneity because I learnt over the 48 hours that in the morning the biggest groups of penguins go to the far corner of the beach, and it's perhaps not the area that people that land in St Andrews go to because it's away from all the action, but that's where you get the biggest armies. And what I wanted was to get a continuous stream of white against the sea and then the mountains in the background. So you had the best pictures you can look at for a long time. If you just take a picture of a solitary penguin, people can give it a cursory 5 seconds, depending on what's going on. But I think with this image, you can look at it for a good few minutes because there is, it shows the enormity of the place. And just a ridiculous number of penguins all marching with intent in the one direction. When March of the Penguins came out 7 or 8 years ago, I still thought and think it's one of the best pieces of wildlife cinematography that we've ever seen, one of the best wildlife films we've ever seen. And I haven't been down to do that in the winter in Antarctica. Maybe one day I will. But I think this shows, I think it's a good illustration of the numbers, the scale, and also the fact that you've got, it's happening against a playground of 10,000 foot mountains coming out of the sea. South Georgia is as much about that as it is about the penguins, and therefore I think to have one but not the other would be only telling half the story. And that was the riddle, was trying to be able to, because a lot of these mountains, they look like Everest as well because they've got this sheer cliff, and there's four of them in a row. I think they're all over 10,000 foot. And to me, any big picture I took of South Georgia was going to have to include those mountains somehow or other. So yeah, it works. Krakatoa isn't erupting in the background. There isn't a kill going on by a tiger. There aren't elephants roaming the beach. It's penguins and mountains and sea at the bottom of the world. But the reaction has been encouraging, and I think I got everything that I wanted to write it. I knew that I had to be quite tall. I couldn't take the photograph lying down because the one penguin would block the other. And I didn't want to be on a ladder because I think 9 foot, to be photographing from 9 foot was going to be too high. So actually, as it turned out, the right height to take the picture from was probably about 5.5 foot or 6 foot. So that kind of played luckily into my hands because it was enough to give you the depth without looking down too much on the first penguin. Because if you look down too much on the first penguin, so you don't see the penguin's eyes, which are difficult enough to see anyway, I think you lose a little bit of the soul. So there was a huge amount of introspection before going, before taking the picture, about how the angle of view, the lens, all these things that maybe some people take for granted. I did an awful lot of cognitive processing, if you like, maybe over a glass of whiskey. But I'm happy with the light was right. If the light had been stronger, I think it would have been a bit garish. And as it is, there's a kind of sensuality to it. I think it's more evocative this way than with stronger light.
When listening to you two talk on the boat, it's very clear that you're storytellers. You're both storytellers, that's for sure. And there was a real sense of partnership and teamwork from the crew all the way through to Abe, your team, and I certainly felt it with David. And I think that came from your leads. And it seems to me there's space for collaboration in the future. Do you guys see a project? Do you have an idea for what might be next for you two? Abe, I know you've got some big projects coming up. Is there space for another David Yarrow, Abraham Joff collaboration?
Well, I certainly hope so. I mean, I've been really fortunate to work with amazing people around the world, but David's He's a unique, very interesting, very passionate, obviously incredibly talented artist. And I actually haven't worked with anyone quite like him, really. And of course, on top of that, we get on along very well. And so I'm really excited and at the possibilities of what we could do together. I think we work off each other really well. And on top of that, I also I do love all the analysis. You know, David, you're quite an orator, and I love the just the thought process and the way that you're able to really express that to people. I think that's on top of obviously the work itself. I think it's you're such a good communicator and actually painting the picture. You know, you are storytelling, like Alex said, and giving people that sense of place, the process, the you're very open and giving with your whole process, and so that lends itself very well to documenting that, in whether that would be a film or a series or whatever we would do together. I mean, I've never come back from a trip and actually recorded the narration on the trip, in its entirety. You know, we often come back from trips, and if you're creating a piece of content, I don't like to write the words for people, but you might do a series of interviews later. You might look at the footage together, decide what you're going to say. But, in the cabin, in the high seas, we actually recorded in really a 40-minute sit-down. We recorded the words for this piece of this short film that we're making. And so that was pretty special, and I was, I could really take any probably 5-minute block of words out of this audio recording I have of David's and cut a really great, powerful piece, because, it's just all gold, So that's a really nice thing to come home with. And I gave LJ, my editor, a nice Christmas present with that recording. So, these are all great reasons to work together. And I think the thing that we possibly share most in common is that we're both so curious and have that hunger for the extraordinary, the remote, creating something different, pushing ourselves. That's what I love to do. And obviously that's who he is. So above all, I think that's what we share the most in common. I don't know what you think, David, but that's my thought.
I had a miserable time. But I'm only going to do it. I've got to learn some more tricks, and yeah, I've got to improve my general knowledge to win some of these quiz games. it was great fun, and I'm too old now to work with people I don't enjoy the company of. I think we set a high bar, both of us, in terms of what is mundane and what isn't. So any projects we do together must be above the threshold of what is mundane, or maybe what's been done too many times before. But I go through periods of kind of like writer's block, where my creative juices aren't running and I'm short of ideas, and then just suddenly an idea will come. And I'm sure there'll be many ways. Your time is precious. My time is precious. And a lot of trips we will go on, like Alex and I have just come back from the Arctic, and we didn't. We got very cold. We got wet, and we didn't really get any cigar shots. But we learned an awful lot. I'd always want to go somewhere with you where there was a high chance of success, because it would be a bit of a dampener after South Georgia. We went on a trip and we didn't get what we're looking for. So we've just got to find the right one. But I think it's unlikely to be too mainstream. I don't think it's going to be in East Africa, I think it's much more likely to be somewhere very old.
Well, thank you both. Thank you so much for joining us, Abe. It was really good to have you on our second ever podcast.
Yeah,
it sounds like it's time for you to go to sleep.
Yes.
We we're excited to have you in the UK. Abe's moving here shortly, and hopefully it leads to a lot of projects.
It's a great time to come to the country. We've got political stability, the currency's strong, everyone's really pleased to be British. So we can't wait for you to be here.
Thank you, guys. Absolute pleasure, and honour to be part of this. And Merry Christmas.
And to you.
Cheers, Abe. Merry Christmas. We hope you've enjoyed this episode of It's 5 o'clock Somewhere. Thanks very much to our guest, Abraham Joff. And thank you to Natural World Safaris for organising the trip. If you'd like to find out details about the 2020 trip to South Georgia and the Antarctic region, you can click on the link in the Entel app. Finally, have a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year from everyone at the David Yarrow Photography team.